and welcome to Mind the Gap, Reducing Stigma Around Mental Health. Today, we will be talking to Charlie Morris, Dean of Student Wellness at WPI. Charlie, please introduce yourself.
Thanks, Astor. It's great to be here. I just really appreciate
it's great
the
to have you.
Opportunity to kind of have this conversation with you. As Astor said, my title here at WPI is Dean of Student Wellness. I've been at WPI for over 32 years.
Wow. Now,
which like kind of blows my mind. But pretty much came up through the counseling center. Started, I was an intern in the counseling center when mm-hmm. I was in grad school, and I stayed on and worked part-time, full-time in the counseling center for many years. Eventually became director and was director of the counseling center and associate dean in the counseling center for maybe 15, 16 years.
Wow.
So then this is a newer role. Some 4 years ago, kind of transitioned into this dean of student wellness role that kind of is a step kind of up, if you will, kind of over all the directors of the health kind of service clusters here on campus. So that would include the SDCC, Student Development and Counseling, Health Services, as well as our new Center for Wellbeing.
Focusing on the bigger picture. That's
exactly.
Really
exactly. And what we call holistic health. Like, people are people. We're not like separate parts.
Could you explain a little bit about what the Center for Wellbeing does and what its mission is as an organization?
Yeah, absolutely. So the vision for the Center for Wellbeing and the mission was really born some 8 years ago, 8 to 10 years ago, when I was director of counseling. Year after year, ever-increasing number of students coming in with mental mm-hmm. health issues. And what we did in the counseling center is we built a really good safety net. Like, when students come, we were ready to support them. But we were well aware with those increasing numbers that there were just so, so many students out there who aren't finding their way to us, who really need some support as well. And also the data showed over the years, it used to be like maybe 15, 20 years ago, about a third of students were diagnosable with mm-hmm. a mental health condition, which was really concerning back then. Mm-hmm. But as of like 4 or 5 years ago, it's over half.
Yeah.
So the thought is, all right, we can't just have a safety net here. We got to get out in front of this. We got to meet people where they're at. We got to, you know, intervene on the level, on a population level, mm-hmm. public health approach to mental health.
Yeah.
So started to kind of talk to senior leadership and trustees about kind of the data and proposed this idea of a center for well-being. And eventually, just before COVID started, we decided we were going to investigate moving in this direction. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we kept it going through COVID and came up with a concept that was approved. And amazing that the whole first floor of Daniels and Morgan kind of cleared out, you know, Unity Hall. Mm-hmm. Those used to house all the offices in the first floor of Daniels and Morgan. And so that space became available just when we were conceptualizing the Center
That's
for Wellbeing.
Timing.
Right? And the idea was the center should really be kind of right in the heart of campus, high traffic mm-hmm. area. Mm-hmm. Talk about stigma reduction.
Yeah.
Let's get mental health and conversations about mental health right out into the center of campus.
Exactly.
And just like normalize it in that way. So it's just so lucky that space opened up. We're able to build the Center for Wellbeing, attach health services to it, which needed new space, as well as some counseling presence up there as well.
Yeah. In terms of location, it's right next to the dining hall, so you can kind of fill multiple kinds of needs right there.
Exactly, and a stone's throw from the rec center.
Exactly.
Right? The physical aspect of things.
Yeah.
So really, and that's the mission, is to kind of really impact on students, all students on campus, not just those who find their way into counseling or health services.
Yeah.
But to provide several levels of support for the student mm-hmm. population. So, you know, if the CWB, Center for Wellbeing, runs certain programs out of there that are, there's a mindfulness PE class that's run out of there. It's very popular.
Yeah, I've heard good things about
and
it.
Students love to learn basic kind of mindfulness skills, and we know that helps them. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of programs that are run to kind of promote connection and belonging on campus, out of the CWB.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, you know, we have our student ambassadors. They're like, you know, 20, 25 students who are trained to be kind of the face of the Center for Well-Being, to kind of promote that engagement with the population and to be a resource for students who are like, I don't know where to go. I need help. And to kind of point them in the right direction, or just to be there to say, tell me what's going on, and to be a support.
Yeah. I think it's really great that the ambassadors who are kind of the face of the organization are students as well. Yeah. Because it, I know that it can be pretty intimidating to go to like an adult or somebody you view as kind of like above you in a sort of way, as opposed to going to somebody who is definitionally your peer.
Yeah.
Can be a lot easier to reach out to them and a lot easier to get help.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's great to have peers who are not only well-educated, but also well-connected within a space like the Center for Well-Being.
Exactly. So, and, you know, think like ambassadors
exactly.
for mental health.
It's ambassadors.
It's really great. And, like, you know, we were on this 20 years ago when data, you know, from national surveys, when you ask students, like, when you're in, like, when you're struggling, who do you turn to first? And the data says it's their peers. They turn, you turn to each other first and know when each other are struggling with mental health issues first and foremost. So even 20 years ago, we did our student support network program. I don't know if you heard of that, but it's a six-week training out of the SDCC.
I've completed it myself.
You have.
I had a great time.
Exactly.
It was a really great program.
Right. And it's just like everyday conversations about mental health, non-stigmatizing, depression, anxiety, what's going on, and what your role is as a peer. How do you best help someone in terms of being a support for them, but also connecting them with the many resources we have? So, I mean, that's been going on for a while, but it's even doubled down now that we have the CWB and this whole other cadre of students who are well-trained and, you know, super engaged with other students and support.
Yeah, and the Student Support Network is a joint effort between the SDCC and the Center for Wellbeing,
that's
right?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, I think that makes complete sense, because Student Support Network to me is exactly embodying what you said the Center for Wellbeing is trying to do, which is like a proactive approach to mental health problems.
Exactly.
Trying to get students out there who know how to not only deal with this kind of problem, but also help prevent it culturally and by responding to how their peers are struggling.
Yeah.
And it also helps people get connected to places like the SDCC or wherever they need to go.
Yeah. And one other element of it is, if you're helping out a friend and maybe they've got a pretty persistent mental health kind of issue going on, that can be really stressful for you as the friend. So part of that building a network of peers is making sure that those peer supports are supported, because you've got a full-time job here as well as kind of supporting your friends. So you're never in, hopefully, you're never in that situation where like, oh, I'm in over my head, I don't know where to turn as a support. You always have, we've got your back, and you've got the hoodie.
Yes, exactly.
It's a Sun hoodie that says, we've got your back on the back, so.
And I think a really important part of that is that it's a support network, so it's all connected, and there's no one person that it all falls on. One of the things that was really impactful for me in the Student Support Network program was them telling us, even though you are trained now to be hopefully more helpful, you are not a professional. And if something goes wrong, it's not your fault, because you're not the one who's supposed to be dealing with this your own.
That's right.
You know, this network of students is there to help because it's going to be helpful, but it's not going to solve it single-handedly. And that really hit home for me, because
that's great.
I've pressured myself a lot to kind of solve things on my own.
Yeah.
And that's not always the best.
And that was intentional, the network. You're part of something bigger. And,
you
know, it's interesting how it developed, because, you know, we just kind of learned as we went along when we were developing this back in 2006. And one of the things we learned was, if you give someone like one program when you were born.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, I had that program, but we did 6 conversations. Mm. And people connect within the group and within the larger network. And then it's the feel is, I'm a part of something. Mm-hmm. It's not I've been trained. I'm a part of something bigger, which is the network of support here.
Yeah.
Trained and supported in this. So that's been, you know, it's just been a passion of mine,
yeah,
particularly students, helping students and empowering that, yeah, on campus.
It's also, I've met multiple other people who have taken it in years past or whenever, and being able to see somebody with that hoodie, I immediately know that they line up with me on at least, yeah, one thing.
That's
and
right.
It's helped me meet other like-minded people who have similar ideals in regards to mental health.
Awesome.
Which is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. And then, of course, like, Mental Health Committee comes along.
Yes.
Love that. We've had Active Minds on campus, mm-hmm, for years.
Yeah.
Right? Which is wonderful. And you want to talk about stigma reduction. That's the core of, mm-hmm, Active Minds' mission. And you know, yeah, what? They've done such good work over the years. That was part of the problem we were running into as a counseling center,
yeah,
was with stigma reduction. People are far more likely to come in and talk about mental health. But how do we kind of support those ever-increasing numbers? And a lot of times it wasn't like with what we call clinical issues, you know, diagnosable depression, anxiety. It was like, I just need to talk to someone.
Yeah.
So CWB kind of puts a whole community in programs like SSN, but the CWB itself is really creating this whole layer of just kind of more everyday, normalized support for,
yeah,
people. We all need it. We all,
exactly,
need, like, someone to really kind of tune into us sometimes.
So, Charlie, you've been, yeah, here a long time.
Yeah.
How has WPI and the mental health landscape here changed since you got here?
Oh, wow. Yeah. So I came in 92. Mm-hmm. Let's just set a frame here. When I came here, there was no internet. There was no email.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof.
Right? We were over on West Street in a little house, which, there were like 4 counselors, mm-hmm, here on campus. And so, you know, it was just a whole different climate.
Yeah.
And mental health was a lot more stigmatized.
Yeah, for sure.
Back then. And, you know, and we wouldn't, you know, we'd see maybe like 150, 200 different students a year. Mm. Of course, the campus was a little bit smaller back,
yeah,
then,
sure,
too. But still, you know, we wouldn't see many students at all coming in relative to what we see right now. And over the years, you know, of course, the technological changes,
yeah,
came along, and we've kept up. And I think that's helped to kind of get us and our message out there more.
Mm-hmm.
But here at WPI, we've always had this philosophy kind of going back, you know, many, many years, that we don't want to, like, sit there in our clinic, if you will, and wait for students. We want to be out on campus,
yeah,
and be known and connected and, mm-hmm, get out in front of issues, even before the CWB came along. So SDCC staff got involved in doing a lot of training,
yeah,
on campus, training RAs,
mm-hmm,
resident assistants, CAs, community advisors, training faculty.
Yeah.
And it was 2 things. It was A, you know, let's kind of make sure people's skills and support are better, but B, like, let's get connected and be known and not like this mysterious clinical entity where you go,
yeah,
and I feel like you're really
that one building over
time
on West Street.
Exactly. That's stigma reduction.
Yeah.
That's really great stigma reduction work that we did here. And it's a model that, you know, is really national as well. I've become, mm-hmm, very involved with kind of other directors of counseling centers
that's
nationally
amazing
over the years. And that's been the evolution, gradually becoming more connected within our communities,
yeah,
and more engaged. So, you know, as the years go on, great stigma reduction work, but also the data keeps showing year after year that, mm, more and more students are struggling with mental,
yeah,
health issues. And those 2 things, every year we see increases in help seeking in 15% to 20%.
Wow.
Fortunately, WPI has been supportive of kind of our staffing.
That's
and
great.
Recognizing, like, all right, we need to kind of make sure that we're able to keep up with this.
Yeah.
So unlike a lot of campuses across the country, we've never had a wait list here. A lot of, you,
wow,
might hear about that. Like, I went to counseling, and then they put me on a wait list for 2 months. Never happened here. Sometimes it's so busy here at WPI, you try to get into counseling, and it's like, you're going to have to like wait 3 to 5 days. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's every other week counseling versus every single week. There are ways that they've managed it over the years. Always been available to students, though, and that's the support that WPI has given, and a lot of other campuses do. And it was probably about 10 years ago that really we started to get into a place where we're never, talking nationally with other directors, we're never going to be able to solve this problem through staffing. Mm-hmm. We can keep hiring more and more staff, but the problem is bigger than that. We need to get out into the community and do more preventive work, public health-oriented work, building resilience amongst whole groups of students. So, you know, like I said earlier, we moved in that direction. And again, great support from senior leadership and trustees here in terms of, this is something that's amazing. Important. And then in my position, you know, we didn't have a dean of student wellness before. The inaugural person in this role. And it's really, my role has allowed us to really come at this a lot more holistically. Mm-hmm. Those directors of Center for Wellbeing, Health Services and Counseling Center, and I meet every other week. We have other meetings, you know, ad hoc in between to make sure we're coordinated in our approach while respecting student privacy and confidentiality at the same time. So that's kind of the evolution of things in the field, is, you know, trying to kind of be nimble in terms of the safety net and creative. And it's not just SGCC. We have a care team on campus that works out of the dean's office, right?
Also a great resource.
Yeah, exactly. And who kind of rally to what's going on with the student? How can we help them out? There are individuals across campus. We talked about SSN earlier. Mm-hmm. A lot of faculty and staff have been trained.
Yeah,
and
that's
are
great.
In the network, right? So it's kind of building, that's been one of the changes too, is it's not going to be the counseling center that solves mental health problems or even addresses all the mental health problems. In a healthy community, it's the whole community that is supported in addressing these problems.
That's a really great point.
So again, that's been a big change, and a lot of the things that we've done and built here reflect that change.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the SDCC is an amazing and obviously needed resource, but it is only treating the symptoms in a lot of the cases. Like the actual problem that is happening for a specific student, rather than the surrounding causes that make it happen.
Oh, I'm so glad you said that. I mean, that is brilliant. This past November, we signed on to something called the Okanagan Charter, right? Which is this international network of folks who want to be on this frontier of preventive work for mental health. Astor, that's one of the key concepts right there, is we can't just focus on the individual. We have to focus on the systems, the policies and procedures of this university, the systems we have in place of supporting students. And there's a good analogy about that, public health analogy. If you had a frog pond and all the frogs were sick, you wouldn't be treating each frog individually.
Yeah.
You'd be looking at the water and what's going on with the water here, where, you know, all these frogs are suffering. So that's what we're doing. We're looking at the water as well as the individual students.
That's awesome. Something that I find really great about the SCCC is what you were saying about not having like a very significant wait list at any time, which I think is amazing. Obviously, that's because you've had that support from higher up administration. Something that really exemplifies that for me is the fact that you have consistent walk-in hours at the SDCC.
Yeah.
So you don't have to call ahead. You don't have to make an appointment. You can just go to the office and walk in, and you'll get connected with someone really, really quickly.
Absolutely,
which is amazing and so useful.
Yeah, I mean, SCCC always had, you know, anytime a student, something significant's going on, like I need to talk to someone right now. Well, SCCC is open business hours, Monday through Friday, obviously. We do have after-hours support. If you just call the SDCC number, and you'll get connected to a licensed clinician. But during the day, you need to talk to someone. You can walk into SDCC anytime if it's a crisis, right? But for the walk-in hours, we instituted that, I think it was 3 or 4 years ago. Just let's get this kind of like open up and staff this so it doesn't have to be this big crisis. It can be just this opportunity to just kind of go there if you need to talk. So yeah, walk-in hours have been great. Again, it's about looking at people. It's not, you know, I've always been, I'm a mental health professional, licensed counselor in the field. I really dislike this whole diagnostic system, right? And the labels that come with it. You're depressed. You're schizophrenic. You're, it's just terrifying to have a label like that. For me, it comes down to the fact that you're human, and so am I.
Yeah.
And, you know, you have a question there about, like, my own mental health and what leads me into this. And it's that recognition, like, this human being thing is a messy proposition. If we think that we're supposed to have it together, especially on the inside, is like our emotions are all supposed to fit together, everything's supposed to be logical, that is just a rabbit hole that you're never going to find your way out of. It's about acknowledging that this it's messy and helping people function within those inner landscapes. That's what the SDCC is about. That's what the CWB is about. That's what health services is about.
Yeah.
Like, and it just takes a lot of the weight off of it.
Labels of any kind come with a lot of extra kind of weight of extra meaning behind them. So not only in terms of things like social stigma, but also in terms of you are this, this is how your life is supposed to look.
Right.
And we humans have a tendency to put things into boxes in a way that's a lot cleaner or more clear cut than...
Yeah, we like to clean things up, then, don't we?
Yeah.
And the strategy is like, if I accept that label, I have an anxiety disorder. I should probably try to get rid of my anxiety.
Yeah.
What's the most logical way to get rid of your anxiety? Avoid the things that make you anxious. There's a problem with that. Because much of life and much of what is meaningful in life makes us anxious.
Yeah.
Right? I often ask WPI students, why are you here at WPI? You know it's really hard.
Yeah.
Why are you making this choice to be at a place that's really hard? And the answer I eventually get when we dialogue, it's meaningful.
Exactly.
Doing hard things, persisting, it's meaningful. And, it, and we grow and we become stronger. That's good mental health.
Exactly. Yeah. And I have a lot of social anxiety, but I also love talking to people and I love, you know, meeting new people, and I love making friends. Like, everything about socializing I both love and am deathly afraid of.
Right.
And it's a really hard thing to balance when you want to run away from something and at the same time get so much out of it.
Yeah, so you can connect to that. Personally, what it means to lean into things that, that are going to be more disruptive. And back to that whole idea that this human being thing, everything should be in order. If everything's in order, then you're probably not leading a very meaningful life.
Yeah,
I hate to put it that way. I just, here's a little caveat here. I'm a therapist, and I've worked with students for years. And, you know, sometimes I'll say, you have a lot of symptoms of depression here. And it's not like you're diagnosed with depression, but, like, there's a lot of symptoms.
Yeah.
It can be a relief. Oh, okay, that's what it is. I don't want to take away from that, that, you know, that we know that people get depressed. We know that people have anxiety disorders and panic-related disorders, eating disorders. All those, that being said, it can be a relief to have a diagnosis sometimes.
Yeah.
But when it becomes part of the just the general conversation about things and mental health within communities, I think it can be as destructive as it is helpful.
Yeah. it can definitely be helpful, especially when, like, I think it is possible to, like, see the patterns of a certain grouping of symptoms, for example, depression, and be able to only, like, take what you want or what you can get something out of from it. So, like, you can see that what you're experiencing lines up with depression, and you can use coping strategies that help people who are depressed, and then you can get something positive out of it. And you don't necessarily have to dive headfirst into everything that it means to be depressed. You can just, you know, cherry pick what you want out of it and get only what positively impacts your life.
Absolutely. Here's a little story for you. Over the years, we've consulted with many different, like, faculty and staff, and, like, helping them help students, right? Or consultants, call us up, we'll help you. So we have a wonderful study away program here at WPI.
Absolutely.
Most of our students study away junior year. So over the years, a lot of the faculty and staff who kind of support that and travel with students in groups, they're like, I'm in over my head because there are students with mental health issues on this trip.
Yeah.
And it's like, absolutely, we're going to train you before you go. We're going to support you while you're there, but you're going to be the support in this. And the question gets back to, like, let's say a student gets really depressed on a study away, right? And it's like, the student is really struggling to stay engaged because they're so impressed and depressed. And that faculty is like, maybe we should have prevented the student from coming because it was really kind of detrimental to the program and to the student. Well, you can look at it that way in retrospect. But if we try to screen out students from studying away, A, it's like a really violation of their basic human rights.
Yeah, that's not good.
But B, it's just, it's impossible. Like, all right, back to this third to half of the population is diagnosable. We're going to, like, somehow, like, oh, you can't go because you struggled with some mental health thing. So again, it gets back to, like, we function with symptoms of depression, symptoms, anxiety. It's not whether we have these symptoms. Mm-hmm. It's relative to how severe are these symptoms? Are they interfering with our ability to function, right? And how are we doing functioning with them?
Yeah.
And that's what it's about.
Yeah.
Life is messy.
Life is messy. And even that kind of, like, have you struggled with a mental health thing in the past is a lot more binary than life really is in a lot of cases. Like, there's a big difference between have you had a long struggle with depressive symptoms, or did you have a week where you had those symptoms, and what do you report versus not report? And it gets really complicated.
Yeah. And let's combine some of the things we've talked about. Mm-hmm. Stigma reduction.
Yes.
Your generation is far more open to talking about mental health, which is a really healthy thing. It destigmatizes it. Significant academic challenges. Faculty on the front lines. Mm-hmm. Students talking very openly with faculty about their mental health struggles. Faculty, some freaking out, like, this is scary, they're depressed. So all the more, like, why it takes a community. Like, our faculty are on the front line. So that's something CWB has really focused in on a lot. Mm-hmm. We want to support our faculty as a group, especially in supporting students.
Yeah.
The old days, when we did training, the old days, this is the evolution of mental health.
Uh-huh.
It used to be, here are the signs and symptoms of depression and anxiety, and if it's interfering with their function, refer them to the counseling center.
Okay.
Identify and refer.
Yeah.
It's not that way anymore. It's identify, support, and refer.
Yeah. That middle step is really important.
And yes, it is, for faculty, for other students, for staff, for the whole community.
Yeah, absolutely.
Study away staff, especially back to that theme, because I really appreciate faculty traveling and having had the opportunity to go to Italy with 150 wonderful students and see the performances. But stuff came up.
Yeah.
And yeah. we all came together and supported each other.
Absolutely.
Got through.
yeah. And, you know, having had other travel experiences with groups before, it can be, it's really, really important to have somebody who can do that support in the moment, because it's really difficult to be in a faraway place and not have your usual support systems,
yeah,
be it
sure.
through your friends, your peers, or counseling center, whatever.
Yeah.
So to have somebody you can feel like you can go to and get at least some someone to talk to in the moment, and
yeah.
then have them be able to connect you with some other kind of
yeah.
larger support so that you can keep functioning in that new place.
Absolutely.
Is really, really important.
Here's a great example of your brilliant insight earlier about systems, right?
Mm-hmm.
We work with the Study Away program to develop a system that really promotes students feeling confident that they can share that they have some mental health mm-hmm. struggles. For any student listening to this who's going to study away,
mm-hmm.
don't think it's going to be a vacation and that your
yeah.
mental health issues will stay here when you go away. They will follow
yeah.
you. And but talk about that. You're not going to be banned from travel because of
mm-hmm.
that. Let people know that, you know, privately, of course, but
mm-hmm.
that, as appropriate, that, yeah, I've struggled with depression in the past.
Mm-hmm.
I don't anticipate it being an issue, but I take antidepressants, and I'm gonna take them while I'm over there, and just
yeah.
so heads up, or so that people around can know how to better support you with that. That's how we worked with the system here.
Yeah.
To let them know, like, you can't, like, after someone's been accepted into a program, you can't reject them based on a mental health issue,
mm-hmm.
period.
Yeah.
Period. And stop there.
yeah, and that's it.
So you need to trust the system in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that, and the system needs to operate in that way to be open and responsive to that and not punitive in that. And we've done it.
Yeah. something that really made me realize how IQP kind of feels not like a vacation, but kind of like you're moving somewhere for 7 weeks and then moving back.
Right.
Was I was on a Zoom call with somebody who's on IQP right now, and he was talking about like his apartment, and it made me realize, right, he's staying there semi-long term. He's staying there for 7 whole weeks. That's
yeah.
a significant amount of time, and he needs to have like a solid place to stay and a solid place to like be his own space.
That's right. And he's left behind
exactly.
a lot of his support system,
yeah,
which is inaccessible
sure.
while he's away. And just
yeah.
also this, you know, just adapting to a different culture.
Yeah.
If you're in a non primary English speaking
yeah.
country and trying to function there, there's, or just different cultures altogether, it's,
yeah.
it's stressful. You got to be on to figure out how
mm-hmm.
do I function best in this
yeah.
culture. So it's study away is stressful. And again, back to that whole, we shouldn't avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
Let's lean into it.
Yeah.
And figure out how to manage it. And that's why so many students who come back from their IQPs, it's been life-changing
yeah.
for them. And they're like, my eyes are open. And it's because it's meaningful.
Yeah. You've also been in charge of both the Center for Wellbeing and the Counseling Center. And I wanted to ask what, if any, there are differences between running those two and how that's changed your perspective on mental health and the WPI community. Anything like that?
Yeah, sure. Sure. And, you know, this is a really great question because once we started the CWB, Center for Wellbeing, some 3 or 4 years ago, there was a lot of confusion. And even to this day, sometimes calls will come into the Center for Wellbeing, and really what they're looking for is therapy.
Mm.
Now, Center for Wellbeing will absolutely do that and refer that. Here's the SDCC, and here's how
yeah.
you get connected and help people navigate that. But some of the differences, counseling center is staffed by licensed clinicians who are trained in kind of clinical support. I referred to them earlier as safety net there. And while they do a lot of outreach on campus, their primary function really is to kind of support student success here when they might be struggling with kind of life issues, mental health related, or life, like loss. Like it's like grief is not necessarily a mental health issue, it's loss.
Yeah.
So they're there more as a safety net. Center for Wellbeing is there kind of more as a preventive kind of and kind of a hub for support across campus. So those students who are out there on the front lines, they're well-trained in all the resources on campus. So, you know, so it's a really kind of nice first stop for someone who might be struggling. And they might get referred to health services, counseling services, care team, academic resources, writing center, this whole wealth of kind of safety net types of things and support services that are available. So SDCC provides clinical care. CWP, they're not licensed clinicians. They're kind of more public health trained in terms of that model of support and what can we do on a population level. What can we do for all students to help with the health and well-being of our entire campus community? The CWB's mission is to support students. Early on, we recognized we need to support faculty and staff and their well-being too.
Yeah.
Because if we're really focusing just on students and you've got unhealthy faculty and staff, we're not gonna like be successful with that endeavor. So we need good role models out there in terms of what it means to prioritize one's health and well-being. Work-life blend, there's no such thing as work-life balance. There is no balance. It's not a balancing act. Yeah. It's a blend. It's how to bring
it over into each other. Exactly. Impact each other.
But recognizing that I'm going to be a better student, a better dean, a better administrator if I take care of myself.
Absolutely.
And I'm going to be a better role model for students. So that's why the CWB also focuses on faculty and staff, even though the mission is really on for student health and well-being. So some examples there that help differentiate.
Yeah, especially what you said about, you know, faculty and staff reminded me about the idea of, like, you have to take care of yourself before you take care of others, and you have to take care of yourself and make sure you're healthy before you can kind of be a leader of students in that way, and before you can be a role model.
I love our faculty here.
Yeah.
But there's a range of individuals who are faculty here, and their way of seeing themselves in their roles here vary. But, you know, that's been one of the shifts too. It's changed over time, and more faculty are kind of looking at their course delivery with also incorporating the value of health and well-being, their health and well-being, students' health and well-being into how they're teaching. And that doesn't mean less rigor. I am not a fan of less rigor. And I said this earlier, when hard work is meaningful. Faculty challenge our students, but make sure your class is structured in a way that adds some leeway in there, some built-in flexibility for all students.
There's a difference between challenging somebody and overwhelming them to the point where they can't do it anymore.
Well put, Aston. Absolutely.
Because doing something challenging still means doing it.
Yeah.
And if you completely ignore what somebody needs in order to do that challenging thing, then they're not going to get anything out of it.
Exactly. And more faculty are really kind of incorporating that when they're putting together their class structure. Here we are again, systems. We're in the water.
Yes.
In the frog pond.
Yeah, exactly.
I love the fact that these are the conversations that we're having right now on a systemic level. And again, that's driven by Okanagan.
Yeah.
You know, that's the philosophy behind Okanagan Charter.
I love it.
Yeah, and I love the fact that we're among early adopters. I was talking to a trustee the other day and just about how, you know, this is a frontier.
Yeah.
And we're part of a national effort to really explore Absolutely. This frontier and what works and what doesn't. And who better than WPI with our, you know, kind of science and engineering and evidence-based approaches and experimentation. Like,
yeah,
we are really well positioned to do this work and,
yeah.
and to do it well here. And we are. Yeah, but it's systems change.
Yeah.
And it's
exactly.
And it takes courage.
Yeah.
Right? And thinking out of the box mm-hmm. and, you know,
yeah.
and yeah, and trying things and you know, and like it's not, you know, there's this wellness coalition that's made of, and I co-chair the wellness coalition.
Yeah.
Should have talked about this before, but
yeah,
it's a big part of my job is to organize this group of faculty, staff, students. There's about 35 people, and we kind of recruit people in who are in kind of key positions on campus to make change on this front.
Mental health committee being one of those organizations.
Yes, represented, yeah, mm-hmm. absolutely. You have a seat at the table in there. And twice a term, 8 times a year, we get together, and it's the first question is, what's going on?
Yeah.
What's going on? Finger on the pulse of,
absolutely.
You know, from the perspective of faculty, staff. And
yeah.
students. And we've talked about things like academic rigor in the classroom. But what's brilliant about it is it's not a bunch of faculty talking about it. It's not a bunch of staff or students. Mm-hmm. It's this intermixing of the community perspectives. And every single member of that community has come up to me. I loved a student said, I love to hear faculty's perspective. Mm-hmm. And likewise, faculty have said, I learned so much from that in that discussion about the pace of life here at WPI, which is fast.
Yeah, it's
but how
fast.
It impacts upon functioning in that discussion with a student. Mm-hmm. These are the kinds of conversations that really are going to help us grow and kind of know where the pinch points are and how to keep the systems work going.
Yeah. So, Charlie, that's pretty much all I wanted to talk to you about today. I'd love to have you back on the podcast at some point if you want to return.
Well, obviously, I like to talk about this stuff.
I do as well. So, that's why I'm here. But before we go, we like to do a different grounding exercise each week. So today we're going to do box breathing, which is a pretty popular one.
Sounds great.
So listeners, if you want to follow along at home, just follow along with what I say. And we'll start now. So box breathing is all about kind of tracing out a box with your breath. You have 4 equal length breathe and then hold and then breathe out and then hold again. So we'll breathe in for 4, 2, 3, 4, hold, 2, 3, 4, out, 2, 3, 4, and hold, 2, 3, 4. So that's 1 round of box breathing. We'll do a couple more and we'll breathe. I'll breathe with you as well. So, in, hold, out, hold. We'll do a couple more and trying to breathe even deeper this time on the breaths in and out, trying to fill your lungs completely and then empty them completely again. In, hold, out, hold, in, hold, out, hold. How did that feel?
Awesome.
Yeah. I like box breathing.
Yeah,
it's a classic.
It's familiar territory. Yeah. I love, one of my go-tos is yoga and just the physical and mental. And
another thing that the CWB does, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yoga. We didn't even talk about wellness days, but you know, it's again.
Next time.
Built into the schedule. Yeah, next time for sure.
Yeah. Well, Thank you very much for coming on to the podcast, Charlie. It was a joy to have you.
Thanks,
Hopefully Justin. We'll have you back again.
Yeah.
For listeners at home, our next upcoming event is our weekly GBM on Wednesdays at 4:15 p.m. to 5:15 p.m. in the Center for Wellbeing programming room. Until then, goodbye.